call the meeting of the Sussex County Council, August 25th, 2009, to order. Today, we did begin out at the runway for the dedication of the new, I believe it was runway 1028. It was well attended, and I appreciate the administration for putting that together. Approval of the agenda. I have got a request from the Bridgeville Apple Scrapple Committee for a grant. Ms. Webb, if you don't object, I'd like to add that to the grant request. Is there any other amendments to the agenda? If not, I'll accept the motion to accept the amended agenda. And a second?
Yeah.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Approval of the minutes in your packet. The August 18th minutes were provided. Are there any comments or changes? If not, I'll accept those minutes as approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are three items today. The first is a letter from the Delaware Community Foundation to David Baker. Dear David, this is to acknowledge and thank you for Sussex County Council's recent $20,000 contribution to the Sussex Child Health Promotion Coalition Operating Fund at the Delaware Community Foundation. It is our understanding that this check consisted of several donations to the council for which you are sending one check. And then it goes on to indicate some of the types of activities the foundation is involved in. The second letter is Delaware Safety Council, Inc. to David Baker. Dear David, thank you very much for renewing your support of the Delaware Safety Council. Your check in the amount of $1,500 was received, and we are most appreciative of your membership and your support of the Safety Council. If the Safety Council can be of any assistance to you in your safety training needs, please give us a call. And again, thank you for the opportunity of continuing to serve you. Signed, Harry Roosevelt, Executive Director. And the third letter is from the town of Bridgeville, and it was addressed to Sussex County Councilwoman Ms. Joan Deaver. Dear Ms. Deaver, on behalf of Commission President Jefferson and the Commissioners of Bridgeville, I would like to thank you for your letter of response on June 24th concerning the News Journal article of June 17th, 2009 on Sussex County budget cuts. Your letter has set the record straight that you were inadvertently misquoted on June 16th in County Council chambers when you spoke about Bridgeville. We would ask this second letter be entered into the Sussex County Council record to appropriately close the matter. Please be assured it would never be the intent of the town of Bridgeville to attribute erroneous statements to anyone. We, as most of the general public, tend to believe what we read and hear in the media. Signed by Bonnie Walls, town manager. And that is all the correspondence, Mr. President.
All right. Does council have any other correspondence? If not, Mr. Baker, would you like to skip over the Economic Development Office agenda item for the time being?
I think Mr. Levin is here.
You think he is here?
At least in spirit.
Will the real Alan Levin please stand up?
He's a pretty big man. I don't think Smithy was in the room. Always likes to make an entrance, doesn't he? Mr. Levin, you are on.
All right. I'll schedule. Come right on down here to the front.
Hey, Alan.
Good. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I had two problems. Number one, my assistant told me to go through Magnolia instead of going around the airbase, which was mistake number one, because obviously Jeff beat me to the punch wherever he is. He took the right way, and I took the wrong way. And the other one, I was looking for a quarter so that the town of Georgetown doesn't nail me. I have a half hour left, Mr. President. I hope that I'm okay for the moment.
We'll turn the egg timer off.
Well, anyway, good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Alan Levin, and I am privileged to serve as director of the Delaware Economic Development Council. And I want you to know that last year, Sussex County was the benefactor of 58% of the funds that we dispensed from DDO. which I won't say is the norm, but nonetheless, it was a record year in fiscal year 9 for Sussex County. And out of those funds, approximately 153 jobs would have been created or will be created. Part of them at Advanced Aerosol at an event that the governor and I will attend on September 10th. And the other was part of a loan to Nanticoke Memorial Hospital, which was critical at that time to keep them afloat. I'm very happy to say that that loan will allow them, or has allowed them, to expand their operations in Seaford, to bring back obstetrics and gynecology, to bring back orthopedic surgery, to make it a full-service hospital. I think that by far one of the most critical things we see when we're looking at new companies, there are two things they look at, education and hospital care. And if we don't have a viable education and hospital facility in a region, then we're not doing our job. So clearly, I think that having and maintaining and growing Nanticoke to the stature that it once was and enjoyed was important to the western portion of this county. I thought I'd just give you a little bit of an update, and then I'd be happy to take your questions if you'd like. DITO went through a reorganization. We are probably a week away from having everybody on board for our reorg. For years, we had developed the organization under a cluster method of operation. And basically, that meant that we looked at various functions of the business community and said, well, it's important we have a finance arm, that we have a chemical arm, that we have an ag arm. And we really didn't diverge from that. We had specialists in each of these areas. Unfortunately, and we also had manufacturing, unfortunately, we learned that we had all our eggs in kind of two baskets when we really got down to it, three. Ag, financial services, banking, credit cards, and auto manufacturing. Well, two of them are on in a difficult place right now. We have no auto manufacturing ever to probably occur again in the state, which is unfortunate, because we have two great facilities, Chrysler and General Motors, that are now vacant. And the other is financial services. The credit card industry is not what it used to be, and we find ourselves trying to play catch-up and look at other opportunities. We decided that, first of all, most people that come to DITO are experts in their fields. They don't need us to be experts in their field. What they want is someone who can make a deal for them and make it happen and bring it all together. So we got away from specialization, and we decided to put individuals into each county. Kent and Sussex used to share an individual. That is no longer the case. I can't tell you who the Sussex County person is yet because there is an offer outstanding, and we hope to have that individual locked up, or strike that. To have them on board by the end of this week.
You're getting confused with some of your
Well,
other
maybe. The police officer that met me is a former state trooper who I used to work with in the AG's office. So maybe locked up could be the proper word if he was talking to me. Anyway, I see this as an opportunity for us to look at different areas, to really get away from specialization and more generalization, more of an ability to work with everything that's coming down the pike as opposed to saying, well, I'm sorry, we only do chemicals, or we only do banking, or we only do auto manufacturing. One of the things that we have done in our reorg that I'm most proud of is our tourism department. Some of you may have heard me speak that tourism used to be a seven-person department that or at least seven people were charged to it, but we only had one person working on it full time. Today, we have six people, 24/7, 365 days a year, dedicated to tourism. It's a $1.5 billion industry to this state. There is no reason why it shouldn't be $2.5 billion in the next 2 to 3 years. The majority of that actually comes here in Sussex County. We get 8 million visitors a year, and we think it's a great opportunity for the state. As I like to say, this is low-hanging fruit. This is an easy one. and for us not to dedicate the proper personnel to it is foolish. So Linda Parkowski, who was and still remains our director of tourism, is now bolstered by five other individuals in that department, and that's all they do. In fact, that's all I ever hear about is tourism anymore. It's really kind of an exciting place to be around. We are talking about cruise ships coming into the Port of Lewis. You may not have known it was a port, but now it may soon be. 175-passenger ships coming in that will basically go up and down from Rehoboth, Bethany, Dewey, up through Lewis to Milton, and see the world. And they are talking right now with various companies bring their to make Lewis a port of call. We're getting into geocaching. I hope I'm saying that right. Those are treasure hunts that individuals that have GPS systems go and look at and do treasure hunts around the country. And we are trying to do that for cultural and historical places in Delaware. And they will use their GPS systems. Not a little too high tech for me, but nonetheless, this is one of those things that is an up-and-coming thing. We have just had the governor filmed for a TV show on CNN, and I can tell you exactly what it's called. It's a Mary Lou Henner, if you remember her from Taxi. It's called The Art of Living is the name of the show, and the governor was just filmed both biking in Rehoboth and also racing a car around Dover Downs last week and basically doing a pitch for Delaware. We spent $17,000 on it. It will be aired over 15 times over the month of November throughout the nation. And we thought it was a good opportunity to spotlight Delaware and let it be seen. And we're excited about that. And I think these are opportunities that we have left before, and we never really took advantage. I will tell you that I get to talk to Dave Baker on a regular basis, as I do with other municipalities weekly, just to say, what are we doing right? And more importantly, what are we doing wrong? How can we make Delaware a better place to do business? None of us are happy with our current unemployment status in this state. I don't know that it's going to get better. I'd like to believe it's going to be getting better sooner, but I don't know that. I don't think anybody does. The economy is tough. You and your constituents know how tough it is. You see it every day. Will there be other layoffs down the road? Probably. Will there be positives coming? God, I certainly hope so. We are working with every company that we can get in touch with, and we have tried very hard to accentuate the positives of Delaware. We are working primarily with the companies that are here, not the companies that are outside of our borders, because we really feel it's important that we first and foremost take care of those that are in Delaware. The governor's point of view is that we must retain what we have before we can grow any stronger. And I agree with that. Most companies in this nation are not doing a whole heck of a lot right now. They're just merely trying to survive. And so we see that in Delaware a lot as well, and we reach out to them on a constant basis. The governor and I go to approximately 10 companies a week up and down the state, just saying hello and what can we do right? What can we do to make your job easier and better? And most, I will tell you, and surprisingly, because I've had the benefit of opening stores in every town in the state, virtually every town in the state, none of them are complaining about rules and regulations per se. They're complaining about business, but they're not complaining about rules and regulations. Because I think what has happened is that the state and the municipalities all realize that we're kind of all in this together, and we really have to work together as opposed to busting people's chops for little things. We can do that later. We get back to 3.2% unemployment, I think we can go back to the old days. But today, we need to all push as hard as we can to make Delaware the best that we can. So I'd be happy to take any of your questions. We do have some new programs, primarily our LIFT program, which is aimed at small businesses. It basically allows a small business to pay down their line of credit up to $12,500 per year for a two-year period on a 0% interest base. The state pays that for them, and then they pick up the debt on the back end. Our hope was when that came out, it was an opportunity for these companies to really get past what we think is the worst of this recession, that this will give them the breathing room to allow them to go forward. When we come out of this in a year or 2 years, things will be better, and they'll be in a better position to pay this off. But that was our objective. We took $5 million out of the strategic fund, and our hope is that we've made a difference with a number of companies already. Approximately 42 are either have been done or are in process of being done throughout the state. Small business companies that employ 3 to 50 people, and companies that have been in business 3 years or longer. We set 3 years because, quite frankly, if they're in usually that 1 to 3 year period is usually a very precarious time for new businesses. But if you can make it past 3 years, you usually can make it. So that's why we establish that cutoff. But anyway, I'd be happy to take any of your questions if you have.
Let me just say before we do open it up that we appreciate you taking the time to come down here, Secretary Levin. An administration often is judged by the quality of people that are appointed to secretarial positions, and I believe this administration has done an excellent job, at least in a number of departments, yours included.
Thank you, sir.
Does council have any questions for Secretary Levin? Recently, I believe there's been an ombudsman designated in the governor's office that will allow for greater cooperation between the county and the state. I applaud you for that effort. You might want to share a little bit.
Yeah, the governor recently signed an executive order, I believe it was executive order number 9, which established a new economic ombudsman. There is no additional cost to the administration. It is the current assistant legal counsel to the governor, Cleon Cawley. Cleon's job will be primarily to run interference. If we have problems, if individuals or companies can't get through whether it's local government, state government, agencies, or the like, once we've given it our effort, we turn it over to Cleon. And Cleon will in turn run the interference and hopefully break through the barriers. He'll be working with representatives from each of the counties, and in addition to that, DENREC, DETO, and DLDOT as well. Seems that the most of the backlogs, I hate to say, happen at DENREC and DLDOT. DETO's a good guy, but the other two are where we have our biggest problems. And so Carol Ann Wicks and Colin O'Mara each have representatives working with this group, and we're meeting on an as-needed basis as opposed to an ongoing basis. So I think it'll be helpful.
The memorandum of understanding between the county and the state is healthy. It passed with a majority of vote here.
Thank you.
And I compliment you for that. We are going to have something on the agenda if you could hang around for maybe 10 minutes.
Be happy to.
And I'll brief you a little bit on it. We have a new paramedic station in Laurel.
Great.
And we put it out for bids, and we took the low bidder, trying to save the taxpayers' money. And after, I believe, some of the bills had even been paid, we found out that because we were using some state money, we have to follow the prevailing wage laws. And today, even though these contracts were signed and everybody agreed on the price, unless I misunderstand what's on the agenda, we're going to have to dig into our treasury and fork over some more money, even for work that's already been done, and everybody seemed to have been satisfied. Is there any concern on your part of the added cost to doing business that those types of laws impose on the citizens?
Quite frankly, first of all, this is a question for the for the governor. But my feeling on a personal level is during these times, these are very difficult times for this state. Prevailing wage, I understand the rationale behind prevailing wage, and I understand why it was done. When we're sitting at an 8.4% unemployment rate, though, and even in my discussions with union members, there is some feeling on their part that there could be some give there. But I can't violate what the contracts are now. I mean, once the contracts are done, they're done. I agree with you, though. I think it you know, it's a sad position to be in. If you came to an agreement, everybody signed off on them, everybody was happy, I don't know why we're back at it again. I understand the rationale behind the law, but at the same time, I don't understand, if everybody's happy, why are we here today to have this discussion? But I will tell you that I personally have had discussions with representatives of the AFL-CIO, building trades and the like, and discussed these issues of prevailing wage. And when we were at our worst, and I'm not sure we're away from that yet, but when we were at our worst, we talked about the possibility of looking at this, and there wasn't a lot of pushback from their end either, as long as there was an understanding that we could go back once things were resolved, once we had gotten to a better state. And I don't think that they would disagree with that.
Okay.
So, but having said that, your contract comes under what is the state of the law today, and I can't interfere with that.
Understood. Does council have any?
Yeah,
Mr.
Actually, some come to mind, Alan. I live down the beach, and I hear from a lot of the boating community. And this is probably, I think it's got something to do with economic development and all this stuff. But the complaints are about the gasoline and the impact it has on the marine industry there and the boat motors and everything. It's just tearing them all up. And the economic impact of all that is tremendous on the guys going out with the big fishing boats. They've had to make all these conversions and everything. I've been to other states, and I was amazed that they still sell real gas. Is there any way that our governor and your administration, which you're part of, could change to give some legislation to permit maybe real gasoline to be used and to be available at service stations, maybe for not passenger vehicles or trucks, but maybe for your lawnmower or your, or maybe these other things, because I'm telling you, it's tearing up things, and it is, I mean, just, I had a mechanic come in the other day, and he says the number of carburetors, and this isn't just from the private citizen to the guy with the big sport fishing boat. Unbelievable amount of money is being spent because of that crappy gas that we got to use in the state. We used to have to go down to Maryland and get our good gas, but now they've even changed. They've lost their good sense.
States have now, unfortunately. I will.
But I've been to, like, in the Carolinas, in certain counties, I have been able to. I pulled in no gas, real gas or the blended gas. So, but I know it's possible because they make it, they produce it right in Delaware City.
Delaware City, at Valero.
And why we couldn't have it in this state, I think it would be send a good message to, at least the boating crowd.
I'll more than happily raise that with Denrec, with Colin, and I will tell you, every time anybody brings up the maritime industry down in Lewis, I get nervous because I thought you were going to make comment about me and my boat.
No.
Because you may have seen me trying to dock the other day.
We'll not talk about that.
Into the wind.
That's exactly what that guy said to me the other day. After the sixth time of trying to dock it, I finally got with the program. So thank you very much. Yes, sir.
There's another problem been bothering me some. We spent about $800,000 last year paying to have our chicken manure shipped out of the state. And the farmers in this state are not getting actually what they need at this time. So they have to buy more chemical fertilizer. And I just don't understand why we're spending this $800,000. It seems like the environmental people could be almost like a stumbling block in many ways.
Councilman?
And I think that this is it's just nonsense when I think that this money is being spent like that, when it's a needing. And it's not that, I mean, we've had our soil tested. Most farmers, and I'm a farmer, has had our soil tested. We don't go out and just spread chicken dirt because I don't even grow chicken myself.
Right.
So it costs me the money to buy it.
Sure.
But I sure don't need to be a competitive with this state that sends us fertilizer out of state so I can go get this fertilizer that I can use on my own soil. And I'm hearing this from a lot of farmers. So the taxpayers sitting out here are paying this $800,000 for what? Nothing. It's just creating competition for the farmers that's trying to grow a crop here in this state. That's just one of the silly things that I think natural resources does.
Not his department.
I should have brought Colin. But no, and I agree with you, Councilor. And yet I always hear, Jeff, when we were at Purdue, and saw their facility where they...
They love it. It's yeah. Because we're giving them
they
the
say
money.
They can't get enough.
You're not kidding, because we're financing it. We're yeah. subsidizing it.
Well, I
we're
understand.
Just sending money over after what? To make Frank Perdue richer. That's what we're doing. And he's already got his million, so why don't we help out the medium-class farmer here?
He's not spending his anymore. Anyway.
Well, that's true. That's Jimmy. Well, that's Jimmy now. Okay.
I apologize. Yeah. I hear what you're saying, and I know that the mayor of Georgetown has looked at various ways of dealing with the problem here, wanted to bring a firm into town for... I won't say for incineration, we'll call it gasification, because we're not allowed to incinerate anything in the state. I think that that issue will come up during the next session.
I don't really think it needs burning. I think we ought to just try applying to our soils.
Well.
And that's what's made this Delaware soil as rich as it is, especially Sussex County, on this sandy soil to make farming as actable as it is now. And if we're going to go against the farmer and send us money out and charge these taxpayers $800,000, to me it's just total foolishness.
Have you spoken with Secretary Key, Bill Key, about this?
No.
I mean, Ed Key.
I did speak up the other day to a large group, of course, I serve on the soil conservation, and I did speak to a group, and of course, I used some words that kind of got to our attention. I call them environmental wackos.
Oh, and, Sam, please.
Well, anyway, they're more, in a sense, sometimes our natural resources is more of a stumbling block than they are than anything else. And then you wonder why people are going out of state and starting a business. Well, time they get through here, 2 or 3 years trying to get through natural resources and all these hindrances and spending all these extra money, well, they said, the heck with this. We'll just go to Mexico or somewhere else.
Sure.
And this is what's creating another problem. We're spending a lot of money. It's not, you know, it's good. Everybody, it's not, what farmer that wants water on his property polluted so when he goes drinks it or his children, his family? We're economically, we're trying to save this kind of things. But they act like we don't have an ounce of sense, that we don't know what's good water or bad water, and don't care if they have good water or not. It's not true, see. Most farmers have been around here for years, and it's hard to eat anyhow without a farmer being around somewhere, you know.
Well, I think, speaking from my point of view, and not on the environmental issue as much as the agriculture issue, I don't think there is any more important industry in this state than the agricultural industry, and I really mean that. It is a consistent... It returns on its investment every day to the state. We were thinking about it the other day. We were talking how everything goes in cycles. But the only current, the only consistents in this state have been ag and chemicals. Now, for some reason, I don't understand that. But we have in the north, we have chemicals with DuPont. And when that's where we've gone, we have DuPont. We have Ashland now, which is the people that own Hercules and Agilent and all. And we have ag in the south. And that has been what has really taken this state and always been what will drive this state. You know, we can't rely on credit cards. We can't rely on manufacturing, unfortunately, now. But these are the areas, and those are the cycles we've gone through. So.
Well, DuPont makes a lot of chemical for farmers.
Yes, they do.
And if you see my chemical bill, and probably Vance's and more farmers,
sure.
We understand why chemicals probably is pretty well doing in business. But it's like I said, some people complain, say, well, we don't think we ought to have all these chemicals in farming. I said, well, we could farm like they do in Africa.
Yeah.
And see how long you'd eat, how
God
well
God knows
eat.
What we'll have. Okay. No, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask Ed Key to give you a call and talk to you about it, and maybe we'll come down to your farm, the two of us, and we'll bring Colin, too. He's a good guy. He's young, hard worker. Yeah, he's from California, so we got to work. You know. No, I'm like, don't report that, whoever is the
European
too
late.
I've met him. He's a good guy.
No, Colin's a great guy. Really
anybody
is.
Else on council?
Yeah,
I've
got a question. Route 1 from Milford down to, I guess, Rehoboth, or even further down, there's a conflict. The county is pretty much zoned for development. Almost everything is zoned either agricultural or residential. And as we bring all the new folks in, they try to access Route 1. And it's currently, I think, DelDOT sees Route 1 as a way to get to the beaches. And the folks who are moving in don't see it that way. They see it as their main street. There's the conflict. And as the economy does pick up and begin to grow, is there some way that we can also take a good, serious look at public transportation from Wilmington to Maryland?
Absolutely. In fact, part of the request that the Department of Transportation just made was for a study. It was released, or not, the money wasn't released. The request was made yesterday for a study to look just at that for transportation from Dover to Ocean City for rail.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, well, obviously we haven't gotten the money yet, but I assume that if we are successful in getting the money, we'll get a clear view on what rail could mean. I will say, in speaking with Secretary Wicks, because I asked her, I said, how well do your buses do down there?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, they don't. They're not successful at all, which is a shame. They run empty virtually all the time, or 10% full. And that's sad, because not only are we wasting money, but it is an opportunity that people don't avail themselves of. And we, look, I grew up in Delaware. I've gone to the beaches all my life. I would never think to take a bus.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something, I mean, I always like to have the freedom of my car when I turn off to go to Lewis. That's just the way it is. And I think we all grew up that way. But we need to change how we look at things. And I think rail would be a great way to do it if we were able to do it, more so than the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd get more usage. So we're anxious to get that approval, and it's $600,000, and we'll see exactly how that plays out.
It would be great to coordinate it with towns like Lewis who are looking at some similar kind of public transportation to get folks around. So.
Well, I really believe that it's more, even though the state, I guess, is the driver on this thing, in my mind, I think it's more the communities. That's not their responsibility, but they need to be the ones that are driving where this all goes, more so than the state. I mean, the state can facilitate it, but I think the communities are the ones that are going to benefit the most from it, and I think they're the ones that really need to push us as hard as possible.
Okay. One final thing.
Yes, sir.
An extra 1,000 feet of runway on our airport could mean thousands of more jobs. Anything you can do over the course of the next few weeks, I understand there may be some critical meetings coming. It's going to take help from our D.C. delegation, and you have their ear, I know.
Senator Carper and I were at the PATS facility a month and a half ago, met with the individuals there, talked about it. I know Senator Carper has been working on it along with our Washington office, Missy Weir, who runs the Washington office for the state. I'm hopeful that will be there.
Thank you. Thank you for your generous use of your time to come down.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I probably don't have a ticket either. Thank you all very
much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next on the agenda is our county administrator, Mr. David Baker.
Thank you. The first item is regarding 911 addressing, and with us today we have Mr. Eddie Parker and Megan Neros, I think they're here. And what we'd like to discuss is addressing and improperly displaced or displayed addresses. There are many concerns regarding improperly displayed or non-existent addresses posted or not posted on residents or various buildings in the county. These improperly displayed or incorrect addresses create problems or difficulties for our police, fire service, paramedics, and others in finding individuals in the county. And it's very important that the address that is posted is visible. The County Council approved an ordinance requiring addresses back in October 2005. Over the years, many efforts have been made by the addressing department to explain to the public and require proper addresses to be posted on properties. They have had mailings, they've had personal visits to properties, advertisements, phone calls, public service announcements, and whatnot. As a matter of public policy, our staff feels that now's the time to bring this to the council's attention regarding the possible enforcement of some of the rules regarding addressing, at least on a complaint basis. We have a possible enforcement program for the council to consider, which would again be based upon complaint. And it is as per our ordinance that was approved. Upon receipt of a complaint regarding an insufficient or incorrectly posted address, and a representative from the addressing department would investigate the complaint, first of all, of course. If there is a violation, a letter would be mailed and delivered to the property owner requesting correction of the address or correction of the problem within 30 days. If the problem is not corrected thereafter, a certified letter would be sent, giving the property owner an additional 15 days to correct the addressing problem. If the violation is not corrected, then the county constable office would follow up with, they have to go through the Justice of the Peace course requesting a $50 fine as per the ordinance. And if the fine is imposed and after 2 more weeks and no actions taken by the property owners, then the constables could go back to the JP court and request an additional fine with a maximum of $100 per day. So these are, we'd like to present this to the county council for consideration. And we have tried and continue to try different ideas to make the public aware. For instance, our paramedics will be delivering a card, pass this out, on properties where that are incorrectly addressed that they notice, and basically a warning card. And I know the fire service has been involved in many efforts like this in the past also. So with that, I'll turn it over to the council, or Mr. Parker or Megan would like to make a comment.
Thank you. Mr. Parker, would you like to share some thoughts, please?
Well, it's our concern that we're starting to get a number of complaints from emergency responders as well as private citizens concerning the lack of posting of addresses. And we do have an ordinance in place to deal with that, and we're simply asking for the council to give their blessing for us to begin that process on a complaint basis initially. We feel this is critical. Obviously, the posting of an address is very critical to emergency responders. And we have people moving here every day from outside of the area, and we simply need to make them aware of what the requirements are, but we need to have the ability to follow through with that and make sure they do what they're supposed to do.
Now, reading this, it says that enforcement originally was to be 18 months after the inception of the ordinance, which would have been around April of 2007. So really already we're past 2 years of implementing the enforcement arm of the ordinance, and correct. You think it's 2 years is long enough?
I believe that there has been ample time for the vast majority of the people in this county to comply with the ordinance, and it's time that we take the next step.
Was there a fine associated with it back in those days? There is a fine associated with non-compliance? What is that?
It's a part of the ordinance.
Right.
The initial fine would be $50.
$50. Now, there's probably two things going on here. Like, some people just don't have the address up, right?
That's correct.
They would be the biggest violators, I would think. Some people put it up, made an effort, but they got it in the wrong location or wrong size or something like that. Is there any way maybe we could differentiate between the two types of people that could be in violation? Because both of them would be in violation. We don't want them to be. I don't believe there should be an equal fine if somebody is maybe put something up, but it's not quite right, versus somebody who's not even done it. Is there any thoughts on that?
Unfortunately, the ordinance is clear. It's black and white. You either are meeting the
or you're not.
The ordinance, or you're not.
Right.
It's not our position that we want to go out here and collect fines.
I know.
That's not the intent of this. Our intent is to get more people to comply and post those numbers so that people can locate them when they need to.
But are we going to file, if we put this complaint on somebody's door, right?
That's something that's being handed out now by the paramedics as they respond to incidences and they find that the posting is not there. They simply give these people, and that's aside from what we're going to do. That doesn't start the 30-day time frame now.
That's an example of some of the things that we've done
in the past
to try to make people aware of the need. And
Well, I would suggest that we would post in all the local papers, putting everybody on notice, you know, an ad saying compliance with the 911, you know, legislation is now going into effect and fines will be assessed. Do it pleasantly, but put it in a nice way. But I think we need to maybe remind everybody, because a lot of people remember when we went all through this and did some things, and some people just, like you say, moved in and don't know, understand everything else. But no, I think it's time to.
We just didn't want to go out here and start a process without you folks being aware of it, because somebody may be upset by it.
So we will give a warning, is what we're saying now? We'll give a warning to people, and then 30 days?
They will actually have 45 days
and then so
warnings before a fine would be imposed.
Okay, and then people will follow up on all that?
Absolutely.
I mean, it takes some manpower to start doing all that, so it's...
Well, aren't some cable TV networks, don't they offer a little bit of time, free time for public announcements? We have to, this is a person's life at stake here, could be. I went around and knocked on 3,000 doors in the campaign, and 1,000 of those homes were improperly marked. Time wasted going from one house to the other trying to find a particular home. That could have been an ambulance trying to find that home, and not just us. And boy, ask the people who drove around with me, and they'll tell you a story about these homes that are not properly marked. And even if once I mentioned it to one elderly person about it, and I said, you know, we had trouble finding your house. She says, well, my number's on the mailbox. Well, but the mailbox was at another location. So, you know, but here we don't say the size of the numbers, do
that,
we?
That is just, no, it doesn't.
Do we
can't amend that.
Does it say so in the code?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if we could let people know that their lives...
Yeah, I think a refresher course.
Your lives are at risk.
We do have
minimal requirements.
A couple years ago, Mr. Guy worked with, I think, WBOC, to work up a TV ad, which we did run.
We really need help.
And it also ran as a public service announcement at
the problem
time.
With the
maybe we could try the public service announcement route again.
We could, but the one thing I want to caution council, the commercial that aired on local television, that was an ad buy. We had to purchase that air time in order to run that. They're under no obligation to run a PSA.
I understand.
And if they do, they can run it at 2 o'clock in the morning and meet their FCC obligations.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of information we have to convey in a very short order. If it's a 30-second PSA or a 15-second radio reader, we really can't get into all of the minutiae and the details of different fonts
or
point
size.
But
the idea is that we're trying to save your life.
No, I understand. and I think what Mr. Parker and Ms. Nierboss and Mr. Baker, everyone is up here saying, is that we've been down this road with the PSAs and with the advertisements and with multiple press releases. The message we've been pumping out the message for the last several years, and we've now reached a point where the staff's belief is that now the way to effect that change, to make it resonate with the public, is to now put into play this.
Yeah, I'm not
arguing
with that.
And, right.
I'm not criticizing.
I just want to make sure that the council is aware that if we want to do the advertisement, I'd let Mr. Baker know that commercial is still out there and available for us if we want to resurrect it and use it.
Oh, sure.
The TV stations have it, I think, on file for 5 years.
Right.
So if we wanted to do it, it's just a matter of basically picking up the phone and calling them and saying we want to buy some more ad time. But I think the last ad run was somewhere on the order of $5,000.
Yeah. I was looking for free announcements.
How about we got the website. We can post information on the website.
I think
we
still have it posted on the website.
Is it still on there right now? Tells you how big the letters have to be and
the
where
ordinance
the location?
Is posted on there, and it's on the 911 addressing page.
Okay,
and
but I mean people have a reluctance to read a whole ordinance. If we could just condense it down to synopsis type of stuff.
More press releases to.
Yeah. Well, I try to educate the public the best way we can, and I'm all game for going, you know, putting it into effect. Yeah.
Mr. Vinson, have you anything?
Well, I think it's time we do this. I have been out there at 2 o'clock in the morning, but you can't find a house.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's had a heart attack or chest pains or whatever, and it's very difficult. It's tough on the family. It's tough on the providers, and this thing is 2 years overdue now, and it certainly is time to move this thing forward, I think. Now versus later.
Okay. Mr. Wilson?
I was looking at E here. If the fine is imposed after 2 weeks, no action is taken by the property owner, then further action by the Justice of Peace would be requested by the County Constable's Office, which would impose a fine of maximum $100 a day. I was just thinking, suppose that fellow's out of town and gone for a week or two, a couple weeks.
Well, we're talking about a 45-day period from the first time that we make contact with them until this fine would be imposed. So we're giving them essentially a month and a half.
Yeah.
And
but he may not, I mean, in this time, he may be gone two or three months.
Well, and we're going to make every effort before we end up in JP court with any of these to get people to comply. We're not going to rush you to courts.
Yeah. Well, we want to think all what we're saying today is true. We need these. Well, but we want to get in people's heads who is really the loser if these numbers are not up.
That's right.
Sure, they are.
The individual right. That has the house. So, I mean, we want to keep that back in our minds. It's not our benefit. It's not the county. It's not our boss. It's the individual that doesn't have this number up.
Well, this does not require action on the part of the council. I would say that it's the sentiment of the council that you have the authority to move forward. There doesn't appear to be an objection. So with our blessing.
Mr. President,
yes,
I would
Mr.
point
Moore.
Out that on the enforcement section of the code, it does indicate that notice should be given to the public when enforcement is going to start.
Okay.
So I believe that there should be some kind of notice stating
yes.
that effective immediately or effective 10 days from now.
Have you thought about a drop-dead day on that?
No, we haven't.
We could work on a press release.
30 days.
First day of October, we could give
that'd
us plenty
great.
Of time.
That would give me enough time to get...
Coordinate something, get something to easy to explain, even a guy like me could understand, and put it in the paper.
Okay.
For clarification, just I'm curious, is there any interest on the part of council with the ad that's been mothballed? We can, like I said, we can resume that ad, but there is an ad buy that would be involved with that. If we want
and we'll hold off on that right now. I know you'd like to get back on TV, but we'll hold that one off.
Was that you on TV?
That was him. That was him. He's just trying to get back on
TV. For ego.
Yeah, he's always aspired to be a newsman.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
You may have saved some lives. Mr. Baker.
Yes, the next item is regarding a possible grant request. Earlier this month, we received a letter from the State of Delaware Parks and Recreation Department asking if the county would be interested in pre-applying for a grant for up to 50% of the cost for a trail or park type project. Pre-application is what you would call a placeholder for a possible project. If the council was interested in this and we pre-applied, then they would send us, I don't know, 4 or 5 months from now, they will send us an application form, assuming that they were interested in the project. And then the council, we get back to the council to see if they and would have more information about a possible project. County staff, including Mr. Izzo and Ms. Patty Teptola, myself, have made a preliminary review of, is very preliminary. We haven't had spent a lot of time on this. We didn't have a lot of time of county-owned properties that possibly could be used for such a project. And we are suggesting that if the council was interested, that a number of different properties could be looked at. First, there is a property adjacent to Salt Pond and Route 1, which also aerial picture for you. Sir, can I borrow that?
David, that's 50% financing, and does the other 50% have to come from government sources, or could it come partly from government and partly from private?
It can be from donations or
okay.
other.
Okay.
And this is a little bit difficult to see, but this property is on Route 1, and it basically, I can't really tell myself where. It's right down here in this area. Yeah.
I want the concession, hot dog
and
concession.
It fronts Route 1, and it backs up to the Salt Pond. And it's roughly, we estimate, about 5 acres of land. and it actually includes part of the salt pond. A possibility for this property be, could be to have like maybe a walkway to salt pond with a water access for kayaks or canoes or rowboats, something like that, and maybe a small parking lot.
Excellent idea.
So that is one possibility. This particular property was donated to the county a number of years ago. We would need to check the documents to be sure that this is an eligible use. And also, Mr. Rizzo suggested that we may have to look at wetlands delineations, that sort of thing, which we have not done at this point. Other properties that the county owns could possibly use for like a walking or jogging type trail, which would, could involve like a wood chip type trail. Again, and maybe a stone parking lot, and there would possibly be some clearing costs with some landscaping.
At the salt pond location?
No, well, possibly at salt pond, but we're not sure. The salt pond location, it is, there is some marsh area there, and we're not sure if we even have enough,
would maybe a parking and, or maybe we could even share parking, because the one side of the property is the maintenance building for the city of Bethany Beach, and the other side is a restaurant, which is only open at dinner. So, I mean, there might be a way that we could, share some parking or something during the day or something like that.
Right.
I don't know, but whatever, or butt up to their parking.
Another property that we own that we took a look at is in the Long Neck area, which is in this area in Long Neck, and it is there is a solid waste authority recycling center on part of it that they lease from us, and also there's an antenna that the county has on the property, and that is an option. If you were interested in the other ideas.
What road is it, David?
David.
That one.
Go ahead. Yeah.
That is on Mount Joy Road.
Mount Joy, okay.
Before we go any further, I think what we have to do is we've got to sit there and look at the sites we own and see if they have, if they're viable for this type of activity. Some of them might be so remote that nobody would ever use or is not a population base near them. The one we first talked about on Coastal Highway, the exposure there is phenomenal. And the county could even, like the state does, have even a fee associated. So we could have a revenue-generating public access, if we had to help maintain it. But some of these other sites, I mean, I'd be questionable if we want to encourage a lot of activity because of the remoteness, and maybe because they're in a population, or there isn't anything really unique about them that people would want to go and maybe do.
Well, that's why we wanted to discuss here today.
You have to do a pre-application,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to say in that pre-application exactly which lands and what you would do, or can you?
Here's a good one.
I think they're fairly flexible with us.
Indian River or one of the creeks.
They seem like they would be very receptive to us if we're interested.
It would make sense that you would file the pre-application.
Right, and then we can
can discuss it, talk about it.
Yes.
Right. Well, let me ask you this: out of this packet. So that we don't have to go through all the sites. Out of this packet, we can't do all these sites.
We can only do one. The idea was
okay. Why don't we do
one or two? I get.
Well, why don't you find out? Let's talk it over, because I know the one on Piney Neck Road has got access to the river.
Yes.
Which is a very, desirable feature. The one on Coastal Highway is very desirable. And figure out, instead of going through them all and wasting a lot of time, why don't we just quickly identify, look at those couple sites, and then come in with Mike gets some engineer assigned to it or something and do that, because I don't think we need to look at all these sites. We're going to just
we tried to do that ourselves and bring these forth for you to even consider.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them, for instance, and there's another one that's in this Long Neck area that is sort of a piecemeal type site that really isn't feasible by itself to use for spray irrigation.
Uh-huh.
So it seemed like, that might be an option for it. And there's another piece near the old Omar landfill that was, it's a buffer, it's a buffer for the old landfill, and you can't, we're not, don't have any plans for it.
And there's the Angola neck landfill, too.
Yes.
Access is not good to it.
Okay.
Because of the way it's situated.
But there's got to be something that's going to draw the people there, and if the site doesn't have any snap about it, that forget it.
So you could apply for this, and then we could work on it.
Right, we have to prepare for the final thing, right? So you got another 4 or 5 months to actually make decisions. And, I'd say you file the pre-application, then we'll move forward with that.
Okay.
That does seem to be the consensus. Mr. Wilson, do you have any thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You really make the policy, you just go look at it.
What's that?
I said, best thing is just go look at it before we make the final decision.
I would mention that we've talked to the representatives from the Conservation District, and they have said that they would be interested in helping with work. They charge, but they would probably be a much reduced cost compared to contracting it out.
Good.
And that would be our match. You know, there is a match. It is a 50% grant. And so we'll work on a pre-application. We'll send something off because it has to be done by September 4th, and then we'll be back to the council.
And we already do allow some hunting on some of our parcels and stuff like that, so that's
limited.
Limited hunting, so that's another area. Some of these isolated spots that might be a place, because there's a lot of people getting squeezed out of the availability of hunting places. So I always think that's something good to encourage. So
I think the council in the past has recognized that parks and recreation departments are a financial slippery slope, and I know that you're going to move forward with prudence on this, because we don't want to get too much on us at once before we know what we're getting into.
Right. Maintenance and ongoing maintenance costs is
revenue,
is
the potential for revenue generating sites.
Right.
Well, you know,
George's hot dog stand.
I got a hot dog stand. I'd like to place it one of these places.
But it depends on how you manage it. And
you want the job?
If you look at Quiet Waters Park in Annapolis, it can make money. People lease part of it for weddings and that type of thing. You know, it depends on how you run it. Mm-hmm. It's also a public service. We can't make money.
The state of Delaware rents a site on the way to Fenwick. Leases it out to a concessionaire who does a kayaking operation. So there are a number of ways that we can turn something like this into, like I say, something that's not going to be a burden on, you know, financial burden. So,
all right.
Especially, you know, if it's in the right location.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any objection for you moving forward, Mr. Baker. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, Dave, on your show and tell on all the sites, but I don't know if we need to see them all. But
yeah, it's fine. That's
okay.
Yeah, it's very preliminary right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay. And then the last item I have is pertaining to the Laurel Paramedic Station that President Phillips made note of earlier.